Translation. O great sage, kindly describe the divisions and orders of human society in terms of symptoms, behavior, and the characteristics of mental equilibrium and sense control. And also please describe the births of the great sages and the categorical divisions of the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada. The four statuses and orders of human society, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras, as well as Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas and Sannyasis, are all divisions of quality, education, culture and spiritual advancement attained by practicing control of the mind and senses. All these divisions are based on the particular nature of each individual person, not on the principle of birth. Birth is not mentioned in this verse because birth is immaterial. Vidura is famous in history as born of a Sudrani mother, yet he is more than a Brahmana by qualification because he is seen here to be the disciple of a great sage, Maitreya Muni. Unless one achieves at least the Brahminical qualifications, one cannot understand the Vedic hymns. Mahabharat is also a division of the Vedas, but is meant for women, Shudras and Dwija Bandhus, the worthless children of the higher section. The less intelligent section of society can avail themselves of the Vedic instructions simply by studying the Mahabharat. Om Gyanatamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Muritam Dena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutare Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatade Sitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Sivasari Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Vancha Kalpatri Vishta Kripa Sindhu Vinay Bhaja Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna. Humbly seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas. Said by the mercy of the spiritual master, dumb man can speak words. I'm praying that I may realize I'm only here simply made of the mercy of my spiritual master. So here we have descriptions of Varnashram. It's a very common theme throughout Prabhupada's books and purports is this description of Varnashram. In certain places it's seen as secondary, and famously when Lord Chaitanya asks Ramananda Roy to describe what the ultimate goal of life is, and Ramananda Roy quotes verses to the effect that one should perform the prescribed duties properly in the orders of Varna and Ashram, and Lord Chaitanya says this is not incorrect but it's external, we should go deeper. But this doesn't disqualify the importance of Varnashram. And Prabhupada repeats it, repeatedly emphasizes it throughout many of his purports, because Varnashram is a system in place by Krishna for the gradual elevation of all living entities to the platform of love of God. Chatavarna Mayashishtam Guna Karma Vibhagas. Krishna propagated this system whereby everyone can actually come to that platform of knowing who Krishna is. So I found it interesting when I started reading, you read Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada, in many places like here, he's saying how birth is immaterial. There's no disqualification for who can engage in devotional service. And like many people taking to Krishna consciousness, I came from a background of very much, we don't like to hear about inequality. You have some sort of social ideals, everyone is equal. Everyone should have equal rights in different ways. And then when you engage with that sort of mentality in the political field, it's very confusing because you realize that, okay, people don't have equal rights. Some people are more intelligent, some people are less intelligent, some people are more qualified, some people are less qualified. And so it creates this whole tension that we see now in society. We're trying to artificially create some sort of equality based on the level of the body, but the bodies are always different. So you cannot get two people to, in simple terms, if you're asking people to race, some people are faster, some people are slower, and so you can't expect them to all reach the same destination at the same time. But initially when I heard Prabhupada describing how one is not prohibited by birth to engage in devotional service. I thought, yes, that makes perfect sense. That follows my liberal views. But then when you go deeper, you actually understand that the reason you take birth in a particular family is not random. The reason you take particular qualifications is not random. And so it's not that Prabhupada has just dismissed all this reason, it's that you've got a higher reason beyond this. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the 15th chapter, it's described that the living entity, just as the air carries a particular aroma, then the living entity carries particular conceptions from previous lifetimes, which then facilitate a particular body in the next lifetime. The air itself is neutral. The air doesn't have any smell. But the air picks up smells as it's going through a place. If it's going through a place which has a particular bad smell, the air will get that smell and carry it somewhere else. If it goes through a place with a nice smell, the smell of flowers, etc., then it will carry that smell somewhere else. So same, us as a living entity, we're not affected by the modes of material nature. The soul itself is not contaminated. But then as we accept the false ego in this material covering, then we become more and more bound by the modes of material nature and forced to accept particular bodies. And therefore, in our own life, we can actually gain a lot of insights by introspecting and realizing the situation we're in. Because the situation we're in reflects how we've acted in previous lifetimes. And so we cannot ignore this. We can't just artificially think, well, I'm in a not so ideal situation, but there's no disqualifications. Let me just completely ignore that and engage in devotional service. This is fine, but a deeper level of understanding is to realize, actually, no, I am at some disqualification. If I think of myself, okay, I was born in not such a ideal family, etc. Now, that doesn't prohibit me from practicing devotional service, but it is useful to sort of contemplate why it was I took birth in that such a situation. And Varnashram is there as such an ideal as to gradually elevate everyone to the perfected stage of life. Because the nature of the material world is that whatever we hold as valuable, whatever we serve, whatever we worship, that is what we become. This principle is true on a material level and on a spiritual level. So Krishna devised a system of Varnashram whereby at the very head, top of society, you have those who are completely understanding Brahman, those who completely understand reality. And the Brahmanas, they describe for every one Brahmana, there would be 10 Kshatriyas, there'd be 100 Vaishyas and 1,000 Sudras. So the Brahmanas are very rare. And Krishna repeatedly throughout Shastra glorifies the Brahmanas. When Krishna is performing the role of a king in Dwarka, he many times gives the examples of how one should treat a Brahmana. Even when Rukmini sends a Brahmana messenger to Krishna, asking for Krishna to steal her hand in marriage, then as soon as Krishna sees that Brahmana, he gets off his throne and starts worshipping the Brahmana like this. And of course, maybe he's an exalted personality, but Krishna's also demonstrating that the Brahmanas are very, very important in society because society is desperately in need of leaders who are connected to God. Because the leaders are connected to God, then those who follow the leaders will also become connected to God. Because it's the principle. It's very, very important we become like what we serve. Therefore, Bhagavatam is full of many, many descriptions and pastimes of great saintly leaders, great personalities who, simply by their association, then the general mass of people become uplifted. It's almost like it's the reverse of a pyramid scheme. Like that, I was thinking in this way. Pyramid scheme, you have someone at the top exploiting a larger mass of people at the bottom. Whereas the Varnashram system is that you have a few people at the top who are completely connected to God, and by their connection to God, to Krishna, then the mass of people become benefited. Like that. So it's you can say the Varnashram system is a it's a reverse pyramid scheme. And these different varnas, in the purport, Prabhupada describes their division of quality, education, culture, and spiritual advancement attained by practicing control of the mind and senses. So consciousness is compared to a lotus flower, which unfurls. That the consciousness is pure, but according to how much one has controlled the mind and the senses, then that consciousness is more manifest. And it takes a certain... Most people cannot see this. Again, in the 15th chapter of the Gita, Krishna describes how the wise, those who are situated in knowledge, can see how the living entity is taking a particular body. But those who are not in knowledge, although they may be trying to become a transcendentalist, so they're not in knowledge, then they cannot see this. So we do not all see the world in the same way. What Shastra does is Shastra allows us to see the overall conception of the world. It's like looking at, I've seen some videos, you can see termite mounds and people can take off the top and you can see all the termites running around underneath. And that's what Shastra actually does. It gives you this conception of this entire material reality in such a way as Buddha Bhavanaprabhu was saying a couple of days ago. You get the vision from start to end. And Shastra is not actually dictating how you should live your life. It's simply saying, this is what's happening. And if you're intelligent, then by seeing what's happening, then you know how to act. You know that you shouldn't do these things because there's certain consequences. So this vision is very much what's lacking in society. Therefore, this knowledge is immensely potent. And it's not expected that everyone within society should be immensely learned, but it's expected that there should be a section of people in society who are actually directing how the society is run, who are learned like this. And these are the brahmanas. And so there's one particular pastime I wanted to perhaps discuss from the Bhagavatam, which emphasizes the importance and the incredible effect that a saintly leader can have upon the general mass of society. It's in the ninth canto, the pastime of Maharaj Rantidev. Maharaj Rantidev is glorified actually in numerous places throughout the Bhagavatam for his generosity. I looked this up last night, so if no one else knows, I don't feel ashamed. But do you know where else he's glorified in the Bhagavatam? There's two particular places where Maharaj Rantidev, his name is used in connection to say, okay, this person is almost is as good as Maharaj Rantidev. Does anyone know? It's in the first canto. It's okay. Maharaj Prikshit is compared to Maharaj Rantidev. He said when Yudhisthira Maharaj gets the brahmanas to take the charts and the astrology of Maharaj Prikshit, then they say in generosity he'll be as good as Maharaj Rantidev. And then also when Krishna and Bhima and Arjuna go to fight with Jarasandha, then to convince him to he should be generous to the brahmanas, they say, you know, Maharaj Rantidev, his fame is glorified. He's achieved the eternal. He has achieved the permanent by means of the impermanent. Because of his generosity, because of his magnanimity, his fame is still being glorified today. And therefore, so Krishna uses this as an argument that Jarasandha should fight. So also, we pray that we may be able to glorify Maharaj Rantidev. It's described he was a king, but he would not engage in any particular methods for his own substance. He would simply take whatever came by providence. And sometimes he would go very, very hungry, and his family would go hungry as well. It's described to be thin and sometimes trembling. And at a certain time, he'd been fasting from food and for water for 48 days. It's a serious fast. And eventually the time had come in which he would break fast. And so it was arranged that someone brought some foodstuffs prepared with milk and ghee and also some water for him to break fast. And after doing this fast, he goes to break fast. But just before he does so, then a brahmana guest arrives at the house, an unexpected guest. Atiti. Atiti means one who doesn't have a time, who's not arranged to come. This is the meaning of a real guest. If you know someone's going to come and you look after them, fair enough. You already expected that. But someone who's completely not arranged comes knocking at your door, and then you can hospitably treat them as good as if they were the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, then that's a very exalted platform. So this Brahmana comes, and Maharaj Vantidev treats him according to his position, respects him, worships him, sits him down and gives him some, he splits his food in half and gives some to the Brahmana, like this. And it's great, he could see everyone in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You could see how this was a representative of Krishna. And the Brahmana leaves, and now they're getting ready to break the fast. They've been fasting a very long time, their bodies are trembling, etc. And then just before they break the fast, then someone else knocks on the door. And it's a Shudra, someone who's not so well respected in society. But Maharaj Vantidev, he sees no difference. He sees again, this is someone who's part and partial of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then just before breaking fast, then he splits the food that he has and gives half to this Shudra guest. And then finally, okay, we're going to get there. We're going to break the fast now. And then third time lucky, he goes sit down, tries to break the fast. And then one man comes and is described, he's got some dogs with him. You know, and this man, he says, no, we're very, very hungry. My dogs are hungry as well. Now, I don't know what the character of Maharaj Vantidev is like, but I know myself, this is when I would probably break. At one point you're trying to say I should feed your dogs before myself when I've been fasting for 48 days. But Maharaj Vantidev, he has this mood of complete selfless giving, of just giving and giving and giving, in quite a scary way actually. And so he gives, and he offers respect, he offers obeisances to this man with his dogs and gives the remainder of his food to them like that. And all he's got left is water, and he's going to break his fast from water. And just as he went to break his fast, then finally one is described, a chandala appears at the door and says, no, please, I am very poorly, I've been struggling for thirst, etc. Please, can you help me? And this is a mood of a real leader of a kshatriya, is to give shelter to anyone who comes. What does this mean? It means that as a representative of Krishna, of God, you know that Krishna is giving shelter to everybody. And therefore, as his representative, then also you have to expand that shelter for those who are suffering. And he says these both two incredible verses. Maharaj Vantidev, he says, let me not achieve any mystic yogic perfection. I don't care for any form of material or liberation from birth and death. Simply, I want to remain within the material world, birth after birth, and take on the suffering of these other living entities, so they may not have to suffer. May I suffer on their behalf. Then he says, and simply, when I give this water to this chandala who's come asking for water, then I will become free of all thirst, all lamentation, all hunger, all moroseness, all shivering of the body, all fatigue. And so this is the real mood of the soul. The mood of the soul is to serve, is to give in love. But we cannot do this if we don't understand that Krishna is looking after us. See, there's a certain phenomena we may, I know myself, experience this. You're serving prasadam, perhaps there's a nice feast, and you get the opportunity of serving the Vaishnavas. It's a great privilege, a great service, but we perhaps not always see it in that way. And you're serving some preparations, and you see the sweet rice is very much becoming less and less and less. And so the calculating mind starts to understand, well, okay, there's, you know, 20 people still to serve. I don't have any sweet rice. And so the portion sizes you start giving become less and less and less. And people, they start to feel it. There's some tension. People, they're looking at you asking for more, or subtly implying for more, and you're giving grains. Because naturally we have a tendency for self-preservation. Because in one sense, the soul is eternal. And the soul is part of Krishna, and we love Krishna. Therefore, we love the soul. But we don't quite express it in that way. We have to think that we have to try and maintain ourselves. So you'll notice, and you can notice this amongst other yourself or other people who are serving prasadam, if you make yourself up a plate first, you can be so liberal. You can give and you can give and you can give, because you know that you're being protected. Now, this is perhaps not the platform of pure devotional service, but it's practical in one sense that you say, okay, I have these limitations. If I look after these needs, then I can at least supposedly give and give and give. But Maharaj Rantidev, he's not on that platform. He's a much more exalted platform, because he's completely aware and connected with his relationship with Krishna. Therefore, he knows he's completely looked after. Therefore, he can give and he can give and he can give. It's not some artificial means of, let me be remembered as a very magnanimous person, or let me just do things and be busy so I don't have to try and worry about my own spiritual life. Often we can become to this platform that, okay, I've not got no ability to actually sit down and chant. I've got no ability to hear Krishna Katha. I've got no ability to stand in front of the deity and appreciate how beautiful Krishna is. So I can just do stuff. I can be busy. And this is good. We're engaging in devotional service. But the highest platform is to be completely absorbed in thought of Krishna. Manmanabhavamadbhakta. Always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Completely dependent upon him. Krishna says in the 18th chapter, Chetasa sarvakarmani maya sanyasya madpara buddhi yoga pastritam machitam satatam bhavam. He says, in all activities, just depend upon me. Work entirely. Offer all your activities unto me. And thus you'll surely come to me. And this is what Krishna is telling Arjuna in the Gita. You should act in this sort of consciousness. Completely dependent upon Krishna. We had the Brahmachari Ashram. We went on a trip to New Braja Dam maybe 2 months ago. There's one talk from one senior devotee there, and I really like what he said. He said you have to develop the skill of learning to depend on Krishna. It's actually a skill you can develop, and if you can develop this skill, then you can be in any situation you'll be engaged in, then you'll always resort to that mood of depending on Krishna, not depending on yourself. Because ultimately, you depend on yourself, then you're depending on a very, 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 very small part of Krishna. Because that's what we are. We're a very, very, very small, minute spark of the divine. And everything's coming from Krishna anyway. So if we can actually develop that mood of depending on Krishna, then that actually allows us to gain entrance into the spiritual world. So Maharaj Rantidev, he has this complete selfless mood, which is giving and giving. And so he says these prayers, I may take birth again and again to relieve the suffering of these living entities. And he gives the water to the Chandara, offers obeisances again. And then this Chandala, this Shudra, this Brahmana, and the man with the dogs, they transform. And actually all along they were exalted demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who'd come to glorify Maharaj Rantidev by demonstrating how magnanimous he was. And demigods, they like to offer some benediction. They like to give something. And they offer, but Maharaj Rantidev is so fixed in his devotion to Krishna that he simply doesn't ask for anything. He simply offers obeisances to these demigods because he sees them in relation to, he sees them as the limbs of the Supreme Lord. But this, and it, when we have this aspect of consciousness where we can see everything in connection with Krishna, this is very, very healthy. Our mood is always trying to separate things, because in our aspect of trying to control things and looking after ourselves, then we have to separate things so that we can manage them better and we don't feel so small. But if we can see everything in relationship to Krishna, then we can be happily situated in this world. So Maharaj Rantidev, he sees all the demigods not that he's thinking, okay, I know philosophically that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know that he's the one supplying the benedictions through the demigods, and therefore I shouldn't ask for any material benediction. But he's not thinking like that. that would be something we would do in an earlier stage of Bhakti, but he's on this platform where you can just see how, okay, these are just, yeah, in one sense, agents of Krishna. So everything is unified and holistic in his understanding. Jai Sisi Radha Gokura Nandagi. So Maharaj Rantidev, he, after these personalities have then revealed their form as exalted demigods, then it actually, there's one verse describing the effect of Maharaj Rantidev as a leader of society. So I thought I would just read this verse in some of the purport, because referring to Varnashram, I think this is very, very important. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 21, Verse 18. All those who followed the principles of King Rantidev were totally favoured by his mercy and became pure devotees, attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Thus they all became the best of yogis. So then Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavad Gita describing who the best of the yogis are. Yogi nam api sarvasham madgatenantaratmanam shudavam bhajate yomam samyukta tamo mataha. One is always absorbed in thought of Krishna. These are the best yogi. And then Prabhupada writes in his purport, and this is very important. Because Rantidev was the king, the chief executive in the state, all the residents of the state became devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, by the king's transcendental association. This is the influence of a pure devotee. If there is one pure devotee, his association can create hundreds and thousands of pure devotees. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described that a Vaishnava is meritorious in proportion to the number of devotees he has created. So this describes the effect of one pure devotee amongst society. Maharaj Rantidev is a leader of society, and therefore all who are in association with him also became pure devotees because of his connection with the Lord. Because, as we said at the start, the material world is situated, is created in such a way that we become like what we serve. Therefore, Prabhupada said that this Krishna conscious movement is to make brahmanas. Prabhupada said this at the start, because in society, the Varnashram society, the brahmana is the head, and we understand from the first canto of the Bhagavatam that when the Brahmin Varna became corrupted, then the rest of the system collapsed. Because if you don't have those who are exalted spiritual personalities at the head of society, then the other people would, if we think about it, there's logically, if you become like what you serve, if there's no one there who's an exemplary in character, then the other varnas will also become denigrated, you could say. Therefore, Prabhupada very much emphasized these brahminical qualifications. We understand that a Vaishnava is transcendental to a Brahmana. If one becomes a Brahmana, if one becomes a Vaishnava, then he is more exalted. He already contains all the qualities of a Brahmana, but this doesn't mean we should neglect developing these qualities, because these qualities are the platform by which we can actually properly become a Vaishnava. In one sense, we understand there's different definitions of what a Vaishnava is. We hear in some places one who simply chants the holy name of the Lord is a Vaishnava. But in other places, the qualities of a Vaishnava are much, much more exalted. And therefore, we're also in a missionary movement, in a preaching movement. We're in a movement, we could say we're in the house of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada built a house in which the whole world could live. And previously, perhaps brahmacharis would live at the Gurukul with their spiritual master. They would go when they're young boys, maybe 5 years old, and would go and live with the spiritual master and perform menial service. And then so nowadays we question, okay, how we're supposed to perform menial service or perform service for the spiritual master. When we can't live with them, many people within ISKCON don't have so much association like that with their spiritual master. We have a few number of spiritual masters for very, very large, for the entire world, actually. His Holiness Kadamba Kanamaraj would say that the sannyasis are like too little butter on a large piece of bread. can't spread them all to the edges like that. But actually, Prabhupada built a house in which the whole world could live. What does that mean? It means that actually anywhere we can engage in the activities Prabhupada's described, and we are personally serving him. And Prabhupada, things that were very dear to Prabhupada, of course, Prabhupada was very fond of his books. And so anywhere in the world you can be, and you can distribute Srila Prabhupada's books like this. And therefore, Prabhupada had a mood of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. And we're often very much engaged in numbers. It's one thing we think of recently. We always think of, I've distributed this many books, or this many people have come for some program, or this many people bought tickets, or this many cars were parked, or we offered this many candles during Kartik. It's very, very much on the number basis. But what we see here from this pastime of Maharaj Rantidev is that one person, being a pure devotee, transformed the entire society into pure devotees. And it's the analogy, I think it relates to, is given by Navina Nirada Prabhu, that you can be riding a bike, and some people, they can ride on a very low gear, so they're pedaling very, very, very fast, and they're not really going very much. Where someone else, they have a much, much higher gear, so they're pedaling what seems very slowly, but that is giving them immense potency and power. And therefore, if we actually desire the upliftment of society, then we have a duty to to have real leaders, and ourselves become such leaders who are actually on this platform. Because then, as we're hearing this pastime of Maharaj Rantidev, by his association, simply by his association, the entire society became pure devotees. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would describe that one can understand the potency of a Vaishnava by how many devotees he's making. And so we often, this is just some personal reflection I'm sharing, that it's very easy to become caught up in putting your self-worth into your preaching, your ability to make devotees. We equate these two things. Okay, if the potency of a Vaishnava means how many devotees he's making, and therefore if I can make devotees, then therefore I must be a good devotee. Therefore I'm valid, therefore I'm worthy. Because actually the nature of the soul, the nature of the jiva, is to be loved. To feel worthy, to feel that you have a place, to feel that you belong. This is very, very intrinsic, because ultimately, you know, when you go back to the spiritual world and you see Krishna, you're going to feel very, very special. You're going to feel that you belong. You're going to feel that you're home. You're going to feel that, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to do. You're going to have some particular service which you're going to offer to the divine couple. Das, das, and das. You're going to somehow assist. So this is actually the nature of the soul, because the whole process of spiritual life is reawakening what's already there. But because we don't have this material world, is full of everything is temporary, so we're somehow searching for that feeling of belonging, of being worthy, of being accepted, of being loved. And therefore we can seek it in many, many different ways, but if they're not ultimately with Krishna, then these ways are somewhat artificial. But they're very, very, just like the example of serving prasadam, you can't pretend you don't have that. So that's why we have the whole system of we have relationships and marriage and all these different things, because we need these aspects of family life to give us these feelings. But then when we're too much accustomed to placing our self-worth in external acts, then this can actually lead to, it will prohibit us performing pure devotional service, because were very much based on the results. And pure devotional service is beyond the platform of seeing the results. It's simply the intention. And when the intention is pure, then Krishna will give the results. So when we see many, many exalted personalities, like, of course, Srila Prabhupada, you can see, you can measure Srila Prabhupada's potency as a Vaishnava about how many people he turned into exalted devotees, and how many people he gave the opportunity to engage in devotional service. But this is a result of Prabhupada's deep, deep internal mood. And so Prabhupada, he would have worked just as hard, and we see previously in the example of his life that he was working just as hard when there's no results. When no one was coming, when people are telling him he's doing the wrong thing, when, yeah, no one was respecting him, he was still engaged in such intense devotional service because he had that connection with Krishna. He had that feeling of a deep, deep desire to serve. And therefore, we have a duty. If we want to follow the desires of Srila Prabhupada and the desires of Lord Chaitanya, that his holy names will be chanted in every town and village, and that this movement will actually be the saviour of humanity. Say something like this, I forget the exact quote. And it's one... I think it was one scholar was saying that this, we'll look back and see how this movement saved humanity in its most dire need, in the hour of need. If we actually want to be a part of that vision, then we have a duty to become very much connected with Krishna, thereby simply our association will allow others to become devotees. So I humbly stop here and ask if there's any comments or corrections or questions from the assembled devotees. Yes, Srinivas Prabhu, perhaps we can get the microphone.
Hi. Srila Prabhupada said if he was doing some brahmanas of prasad, then generally they don't save anything. They renounce from their purity. But if new bhaktis are asked to serve prasad, then because their mind senses are not controlled, just to keep them pacified, they should save plates aside so they know something is there for them.
Yeah. See, this is practical. You have to acknowledge what level you're on and what your needs are. Because if you artificially pretend that you don't need that and you go to serve, then you become... I've seen it, this is my own personal experience, you can actually become angry towards people who are just coming up for prasadam. Because what's actually happening is that you yourself haven't addressed your own needs. And so a lot of these feelings like, you know, anger or etc., if we can introspect, we can see how it's simply our own need which isn't being met. And so we can't artificially practice some false renunciation if it's not there. I'd add. Yeah. Prasadam dynamics is interesting. And I've heard in certain temples in South India, minimum 6 months you have to be living in the ashram before they'll let you serve prasadam. Because it's a very exalted service. And if you can see it in that light that I'm actually allowing... I'm personally serving all these Vaishnavas, it's a very nice meditation. But then very quickly you become the centre again, my dad. Yes. Paramakrana Rupa.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying that it's not by birth, it's by qualification that one determines if one is a brahmana, kshatriya, etc. And then at the end of the purport, he speaks about one has to be intelligent. Those who are less intelligent they study the Mahabharata as opposed to the Vedic literatures. So really, it seems like the qualification is intelligence, right? To be a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, so on. So it's based on your intelligence. How do we measure or how do we identify how someone is intelligent?
Intelligence means seeing reality as the ability to actually understand like this. But how we measure, I guess that would be in the one spiritual master, a senior, should then direct a disciple as to where they should be engaged. But perhaps if devotees have some thoughts on this, I don't want to speculate. Guna and karma.
Jignesh Prabhu is saying is guna and karma, qualities and activities. So what is that intelligent activity or quality? Because Prabhupada is saying the word intelligence, less intelligent, intelligent. Yeah, and also, yeah, nowadays, yeah, you wouldn't say, okay, you're less intelligent, but you're more intelligent. You wouldn't be able to say that. Right?
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't you ask me some comment?
One has to judge by character and behavior.
It's good in karma.
It's like, for example, like there's an example of Gorkishoda. The story of one person was known as a Mahant. He was chanting day and night, right? So many people were coming to disturb him at night time. And this was a question asked to Gorkhisar Babaji Maharaj, how do you judge a Mahabhagavat? And because so many people were unnecessarily disturbing him, he created a situation. He got a rich person to get a woman to sweep outside his place. And the people, when they saw this, they couldn't, and they started criticizing, what kind of Mahabhagavat is this? So, Krishna Bhagavan answers the question that sometimes when people start serving advanced devotees, and Krishna is indebted to the advanced devotees, and those who serve those advanced devotees, Krishna has to be indebted to them as well. So sometimes Krishna creates a situation to test these people out to see how serious they are in serving that devotee.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, regarding the intelligence point, one thought I have is your intelligence dictates where you actually become attracted to study. So we have the example in here that unless one is the Brahminical qualification, one cannot understand the Vedic hymns. And if one is not on that platform, or on a lower platform, they should study the Mahabharata. And you'll find that, okay, naturally some people will be drawn towards that particular literature, and other people will be drawn towards another particular literature. You can see it, you have a class full of school children. Some people will be drawn towards reading certain types of books. Other people have no interest in them. They'll be drawn towards other types of books. So it's almost like we often have the external, we hear a rule like one, unless one's a Brahmana, one should not read the Vedic hymns. So that feels very exclusivist, very much like elitist. So you have to be part of a certain social status in order to access these texts, and therefore it's discriminatory. But actually, if you're not on that platform, the text won't make any sense to you and you won't have any attraction for them anyways. So like that, the intelligence reflects, perhaps, is one thought.
So, Paramkaruna Prabhu was asking about guna and karma, so it's a reference. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verse 8 to 12, as we know, manitvam adambitvam. So this is the qualities, and karma, maybe we can see the action. First of all, based on my perspective, that we shouldn't judge others. We should judge ourselves first, that where am I on my devotional service? I'm on the right track, or I'm just like falling everywhere. So, and quality, you can see like someone is like maybe neophyte or someone is advanced. So you can see their dealings, the activity, the decisions. Like we see dealings and memories from Prabhupada. So we can understand like how some advanced exalted devotee behaves in various situations. On the other hand, someone who is neophyte, if he has to deal with something, then how he does act. So this is how we can see, but this is secondary. Primary is I would focus on myself, that why should I judge others, because I am fully lost case.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like completely dependent on mercy, and who am I to judge?
Thank you. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you so much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Grantaraj Bhagavatam ki, Tai Gaur Premanande.